for the fans, by the fans. This is the Non-League Football Show with me, Tim Fuel, here back on solo duties at the desk. But I have had the help of Mr. Dave Anderson with a special new feature focusing on the men in the dugouts. Some of that to follow, along with this week's news, views and insight from the non-league game. It's FA Vars weekend, the start of another new month, and more managerial movements to digest. So plenty to chat about, so let's get things underway. Okay, so as I mentioned, I've been ably assisted this week by Dave Anderson, who I sent out on a mission to get some real insight into managers. So off he went with his little bag, packed with two microphones, a set of headphones, a doobry for his phone, a roll of gaffer tape for health and safety purposes, and all the managerial nous that only comes with years of being in the dugout. The Gaffer Tapes will launch later this month at a new standalone podcast with our very own FA Vars winning manager, meeting managers from across the pyramid and finding out what makes them tick and why they go through the stress, the strain and the pain of being a football manager. The following interview with Steve McKim of Tunbridge Angels is a shortened version of episode 1 with the full interview available on the Gaffer Tapes when it launches later this month.
Okay, state your name for the record.
Steve McKim, Tunbridge Angels, gaffer, 6 years.
Yeah, welcome, and thanks for agreeing to do this. I just started chucking it down at Woolston, but, you know, we've known each other a while, Mark, it would be fair to say. And I've interviewed managers who have played for me or against me over the years, and some of them have been real shocks that they became managers. You absolutely weren't. You know, you were one of them guys that I sort of thought, even before you finished playing, I felt that you were destined to go the other side of the fence. Is it, was it always something in your head?
Yeah, give me a chance to give a load of rollickings to players that I used to take. It's something that I always thought I'd be involved in football. Coaching was the main thing. I love that. But then when you give the chance to be the head of the team, then That's the next step, and as you know, it's great when it goes well, but it's horrible when it's the results go against you.
It is, and to be fair, you didn't rush into it, because when you finished playing, I remember you went with Paul Doswell, if I'm right, at Sutton, for a few years under Paul, and sort of not learned how to be in the dressing room, that side of it, but it is a different side to be when you, so you different sort of way from, you retire from playing, you go into the, so with Paul, were you just mainly doing the technical stuff?
Well, no, to start with, I went as player coach. So I was only 30, left Margate, went as player coach. First year, didn't start playing, but then played probably 25 games in the end that I weren't expecting to play. Second season, played a bit more. And then it was the third season, decision time, coaching. But in that time, I was doing all the stuff on the playing field. He had all the stuff, the set pieces and that done. Told me how he wanted to play, and I tried to do that on the pitch. But it's hard when you're playing to coach, because you try and get players to standards that you want, and when you don't do it, you look a fool. So it was the right time to come out, and I learnt a lot under him. It was interesting, but I learnt a lot, and I learnt a lot coming away from actually playing, and that was probably the best thing I'd done. When he gave me the ultimatum, if you like, you either go and coach or you go and play. So I decided to stay there and coach, and I lasted another 3 years with him.
Yeah, and retirement's never an easy thing, outside of an injury that finishes players. It's never an easy thing to push you away from playing. Did that make it easier? It clarified it for you?
No, not really, because I still ain't retired, mate. Yeah. I'm still not retired. Up until 2 years ago, I'd signed on at Tunbridge, but now my knee went, I'd done my knee at Gravesend, and I got back playing, and I had some good times, but then I started getting a few little niggles with it, and I had to think of the future. So I think it was 34 in the end that I actually had my last game. So I used to play in the Surrey Cups for Sutton with the youngsters, but then, like I said, I do a bit of vets now, which is good, with some good players, makes it easier. But no, when you actually finish, you know, it's tough, because you still think you can do it. But I look now, and the athleticism in some of these boys, we were fit and we could run. Or we didn't run probably as fast as these players now. Probably I'd say we covered the same distance, if not more. But nowadays, they are fine-tuned. There ain't a pint and a burger and stuff like that going on a Friday night. You know, they look after themselves and they are fit. So you got to look at it and think, when you're 34, 35, as much as you love it, you'll either drop down to levels that you don't want to.
Frustrate you, really.
It kills you because you see things that they don't see. And the next best step is coaching and then obviously leading into management. So I've had a journey, but an enjoyable journey.
Yeah, so far it would have to be said as well. You know, you're only a young man. I don't think there's any Grecian in there, Macker. You know, I wouldn't like to go that far. But you know, and sort of with playing, I mean, I look back. I mean, I retired personally very young. So my the people who motivated and sort of were my mentors were people I'd worked with as assistant. You know, so Bob Dowie would be the big one in my head. So through your playing career, you know, and I don't want you to slate managers, but who's the ones that you would stick out for you that you thought, well, he's better than the average player?
You know what, mate, I've been lucky, and I will say that I've been lucky that all my managers have been good in terms of I learned a lot from them. Listen, I was captain in most of my teams.
Yeah.
So rather than them have a go at the youngster, they'd just make a beeline at half-time or after the game for me, take the frustrations out on me, and I'd have a little bite back, and we'd have a pint afterwards in the bar, and he'd just explain.
Who are we talking about?
Well, Andy Ford was prime example. Yeah. You know, he was brilliant. He was at Forest Green. He absolutely ripped me a new one, but I had two youngsters sitting next to me, and he then spoke calmly to them, and in the bar and on the coach on the way home, he explained exactly why.
Yeah.
And that was a trend, you know. And I took that on board because I'm captain. I've got to take the rough with the smooth, and I used to take them batterings, and it was quite good because I used to go back with my own bit, but not being disrespectful to the manager. But Fordy was the one that we used to have right ding dongs with, me and him. But it was all forgotten with afterwards, and there was a reason behind it, which was great. And sometimes I try and do that. You know, I try and replicate that with some of my experienced players, because nowadays, you know, the youngsters, mate, you can't even say boo to them and they'll melt. So it's unfortunate, but that's the way football is now.
But you know, it's a funny thing, because it's something that comes up time and time again. You know, and I look upon myself as a dinosaur. I certainly don't look upon you as a dinosaur. But you played in a period where dressing rooms could be volatile places, and that has changed massively. Have you had to change with it? I suppose you have to change with it, Macker, don't you?
Yeah, I've got to change, mate. I've got to change, and like I say, everybody... It's tough, but you got to understand where football is nowadays, and if you just kept battering people, you're not going to get the best out of them. So you do have to change, but my policy has always been, I've been honest as a coach, as a player, as a manager. So if I'm honest with someone, whether I'm screaming and shouting at them or I'm telling them in a calm way, they still get told in no uncertain terms they're not doing it. You have to change your tone at times, but there's times where they've got to get it, and they've got to understand that it's not all rose in the garden, and some can handle it and come out a different side of it, some can't. I'll go back to the story at Wingate when I first started, first season, you know, we had no budget, we'd just been relegated, I'd just taken over the job, and I had two young fullbacks, and we played Wingate away, and I ripped a pair of them one at half time and after, and it's unfortunate, one of them couldn't take it because he'd never had that, and he didn't play for me no more because he didn't want to play. He ended up playing in the combined counties because probably it was easier for him. Yeah. You know, you have to be tough mentally, regardless whether you can take a bollocking or not. And like I say, unfortunately, that day one did, one didn't, and one's still with me.
Well, yeah, and I suppose the theory there as well is that you have to want stuff as a player. You have to want it, and as much as we have to change as gaffers, they have to stand up to the plate as well, because as much as you change and you mellow and you move on, which I feel you have to and to get where you are, it's your house still, you know, still your dressing room, and that's a balance that you must have to. It is a balance, an act, isn't it?
Yeah, you got to have the balance, because otherwise you don't necessarily lose the dressing room, but you lose the players, and that player might be the best player you can get for the money you're able to give, and if you lose that, it's like trying to bring players in. If I was to get rid of any players, I'd have to make sure it's the right player to come in, because the money.
Yeah.
You know, that, and get, like I say, having a go at players, they have to understand that it's football now, and they have to grow up. And I do get a bee in my bonnet about it, how temperamental these players are nowadays. Yeah. I think it comes from the top. I really do. I think it comes from the top. But non-league, listen, you're playing non-league football. You're training for an hour and a half, 2 hours on a Tuesday and a Thursday and playing on a Saturday.
Yeah.
Yes, you get paid for it, and some get paid decent for it. But you got to be able to take a bollocking. You got to be able to stand up for yourself, but in a respectful way to the people that are dishing out the truths to you. Because it's only truths that are told, Dave.
Yeah, no, my theory of it was that over the years, when I first sort of started this stuff, every sort of 25-year-old in my dressing room was more or less either married or had kids or was engaged, was it on a building site. I know I'm exaggerating here, but working with men all day and all night. And when I finished, every 25-year-old was living at home going to college. And you see the two sides of the story straight away, you know, and you sort of have to move with it. But just to move on a little bit, you know, we spoke about you working under Paul Doswell and what you did with him. And I know Barry Moore well, you know, and Moore played with me at Wimbledon for a while. And you've been mates for a long time. That relationship, that's an important relationship in a dressing room, the manager and the assistant. You know, tell me a bit about that with Buzz.
Well, like I say, he's been a mate of mine. We played in the midfield at Hayes together, you know. I remember us coming to meet you to go and sign for Wimbledon. And you took him and said, I can't afford you, but you didn't even know how much I wanted.
I was right, though.
even then, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Me and Barry have known each other for years. You know, our kids go to school together. You know, we live close together. Mm. And it was always a case, if I got a job, he was always going to come with me. We spoke about that, and lucky enough I got this job and he came with us. And the best thing about it, players see us rowing, but players also see us afterwards in the bar having a laugh and a joke and a beer. That nothing, no grudges are held, because we both want to win. Decisions I make are final, but
you can't have a yes man, you've got to have someone
exactly who, and I always get advice from the staff, whether it's a goalkeeping coach. I always get advice from them, but the buck stops with me. You know, it's my job on the line, if you like.
Yeah.
But we have rows about things, and in the changing room, you know, we don't agree on things. But at the end of the day, people see us together in the bar, and that's what I want from the players.
Yeah.
Have a row on the pitch, let people know they're not doing their stuff. But as soon as you come off and you go in the bar, whether you win, lose or draw, you're back to being a human being and a normal person, a family man, or like you just said, they're a college person.
Yeah.
Have a drink, whether it's a Lucozade or a beer, and go home. Don't let it fester for a few days where all of a sudden you come in training on a Tuesday and the atmosphere's bad. So we rub off on the team, I believe.
So it's not a some people would sort of go, Steve McKim, Barry Moore, known each other for a lifetime. Comfortable relationship that. But it can't be, can it?
No chance. Listen, he knows his football inside out like I do. You know, he does a lot of coaching. I do a lot of coaching outside of Tonbridge, you know, with kids and stuff like that. But we've got our own ideas on football, and lucky enough, we mirror each other.
Yeah.
But I say we're not going to always agree, and you don't want that.
No.
Like you just said there, you don't want a yes man.
Yeah.
And that's something he's never has been, never will be, as you know, having him in your team.
Absolutely.
You know, he's got his point of view.
Yeah.
Whether
you
agree with it or not, he'll say it as well.
Yeah.
And like I say, he gets frustrated on the sidelines with players, so do I, because we think that they can do better. We know they can do better. It's just them believing in themselves like me and himself did when we was out there, you know. You're going to make mistakes.
Yeah.
But make mistakes trying to do the best you can.
Yeah, and sort of going into the, you know, you've both been at Tonbridge for six. I didn't realise it was 6 years. Which is two terms in today's world, isn't it? Maybe three, you know. So that how do you, because I'm trying to think. I'd sort of 5 years, maybe 5-6 years at Hendon, but it was going back away when it was the norm. Mm. It's not the norm now to be in the same club for 6-7 years. How does that, is that the chairman board relationship? Is it the, how do you reinvent it? How do you keep that fresh? I know you've just had big success, which helps, but how do you keep that alive?
Well, we've first went in, you know, Tonbridge, we're not the biggest payers, you know, so we have to cut our cloth accordingly. And what we do is, the board are great. The fans, we get 400-500 fans in the Bostic. Now we're getting 600-700 and
excellent.
We're not winning. But because off the back of last year's success, you know, it's not momentum in terms of winning games because it's a tough league.
Mm.
But the fans are enjoying it. You know, coming to grounds like we're at today, you know, playing against teams like we're playing against today. But there's times where, like I say, we've had some bad spells where people have been against us. Majority have been with us. That's the best thing about it. Majority of these fans and the board have stuck with us through the bad times. We've had 300 games, so we're doing something right. And like I say, it's just, if we can keep these in this league this year, you know, it's massive. It's massive, and that's our aim. You know, we want to finish as high as we can, but if we can keep us in the league this year, it's a massive achievement. Then it's up to the board. If the board want to get rid of us, they get rid of us. Yeah. If they want to keep us, they keep us because we're enjoying it at the minute. But it's ultimately down to the board what they decide. If they don't think we're doing a good enough job for Tonbridge Angels, yeah, we can be easily replaced. They obviously think we're doing something right. We're playing some nice football. We do the best we can with what we've got. And listen, I haven't had no clubs coming knocking on my door from higher up saying, oh, Steve McKim, come and manage me. So what am I going to do? Just walk away and not be a manager? I love football. Yeah, that's the difference. My family love football. They love coming to games.
Well, that's, you're fortunate
with
that, yeah.
So my boy's here today, yeah, my youngest one. But normally my wife, my daughter and my other son come. So Barry's family come. So the club embrace our family. When I first come to the club, I got everybody involved, the fans and the players. And they like that. But because my family loves football, I'd be lost. Yeah. Wife, as everyone says, the wife would have me doing stuff indoors, but then she'd be lost because she'd want to go to football and stuff. Because we're a football family. You know, Sundays, we're out in the Sunday morning watching me boy.
You'd always end up with one of these in your hand, and if you're another manager's macker, you know?
Probably, mate, because that's what I'd want to do. I'd want to be involved in it. Yeah. It's been my life since 16.
That was Steve McKim, manager of Tonbridge Angels, talking to Dave Anderson. That was a shortened version of a longer interview that will feature as episode one on the Gaffer Tapes when it launches later this month as a standalone podcast. We hope you will give it your full support. So it is the second round of the FA Vars this weekend, and it's always a pleasure to speak to clubs from Step 5 as they progress in this competition. And it's an old friend of the show this week as I go closer to home and welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, Pat McManus, manager at Brockenhurst FC.
Hi Jim, how are you?
I'm very good, I'm very good. It's an exciting week for me, but it's an exciting week for you as well. I mean, the last round of the FA Vars, you had a great win down at Bishop's Cleeve.
Well, yeah, we did. To be fair, it was a really tough game. And, we left it late, 2-0 down. We didn't really start the game as well as we would have liked. And... It panned out well in the end, but they were a really good side. They were a good side on the day. We knew they would be when we went and watched them prior, and we rode our luck a little bit, to be fair. And our goalkeeper John Webby, you know, even when we went 3-2, he made two incredible saves at the end that stopped it going from extra time. Really, right, you know, in 6 minutes of added time. Two incredible saves, and they would have felt, you know, a little bit aggrieved that it didn't go to extra time at least. But they were a really good side, you know. I think they'll be playing Southern League football again next season, to be sure.
Yeah, and yourselves now this weekend, it sets up a tie, home tie, and your visitors, they're another side. I keep an eye on the results on there every week, having previously had them on the Non-League Football Show over the years as well. But you've got Plymouth Parkway coming your way. I don't suppose you've had the benefit of a budget to be able to fit in a scouting mission to see how Plymouth Parkway play.
Well, the previous round draw fell really kindly for us, Tim, because when we played Bishop's Cleeve, their game versus Romsey got postponed. So they had to come up on the Wednesday to Romsey. So myself and my coach Ryan, I live in Romsey. Romsey town is literally a 2-minute walk from my house. So it saved me a trip down to, because I would have gone and watched them. So it saved me a trip to Plymouth. So I actually got to see them beat Romsey in the first round. So we've physically seen them. We've seen a few videos. Again, you know, they're a very, very good side. So we've got our work cut out on Saturday. We know that. But, we know plenty about them. But they are a very good side. They're in good shape. They've got lots of threats all over the place. You know, they've got Adam Carter, who scores a lot of goals. He's been around the block. yeah, no, I've just seen a tweet that's just gone out about the top 10 teams in the country or 10 divisions in the country with goal difference, and I think they've got a goal difference already of about plus 35. So they score a few and don't let many in. So you know, at our level, they're a very good side. So I should imagine they've got aspirations of going pretty far in this competition as well as winning their league. I think it's them and Bradford Town are sort of they're head and shoulders above everybody else in their league at the moment. So.
And that's what I love about talking to managers at your level and below. It's the understanding of football and the knowledge that you need to know, even at your level. People don't understand the commitment that being a manager means at every level of football. And it's probably more difficult at the lower you go down because the availability of players, other strains, you know, lack of budget and things like that. But you still do it. Why do you do it?
I think it's, even at our level, you know, we still put a lot of expectations on our players. That obviously the players drive us mad because, you know, and this is even, we know it's getting worse even at your level, Tim, because there's players who pick the game up and put it down whenever they like with regards to holidays and things. We suffer from that at our level even more so. But, you know, you've got to keep, as managers, you've got to keep setting an example and making sure you're prepared. So, you know, we go into every game known as much as, you know, as anyone about the opposition. I make a point of watching every single team in our league prior to us playing them. You know, I'd have watched them. Our radius in our league is probably only sort of furthest away is probably about 65 to 70 miles. But, you know, we make a point of watching everyone so that we're prepared. So, you know, when I stand there and tell people off for not preparing properly, they, you know, I can do it with some authority because it can never be levelled at us. So,
you say about that commitment from the players. Has the FA VARs got that magic? Well, obviously, Dave Anson, my standard co-presenter here, he won the FA VARs last year, and despite all the accolades and all the success that he's had over his career, I know it was a massive thing for him. The chance to play at Wembley, even just progressing, in the quarters, he was exciting. In the semis, is there that buzz from the younger players that are coming through for the FA VARs?
Definitely, because if you look at it, it's much more of a level playing field because, you know, in the FA Cup, we start in August, you know, second game of the season, you may get, if you're lucky, you may get three or four games, but, you know, in the VARs, you're playing at teams, it's more of a level playing field because you're playing teams at your level, even if you win one game, two games, three games, four games. You're only playing teams at your level and one below, you know, if you're a step five club. So if you keep playing well and you get a kind draw, which, to be honest with you, we didn't have a kind draw last one, and we haven't, in my opinion, we haven't had a kind draw this time because, you know, Plymouth, I think, are probably one of the best teams still left in it. So, but you know that on your day, you can get a good result if you prepare properly and everyone turns up, as it were.
A home draw, does that make a big difference to you, certainly when you're trying to rally the players and get the whole everybody behind the club for a game like this?
I think it makes a bit of a difference, but not a great deal, because everybody likes an away day, to be fair. But, you know, we had a great day going to Bishop's Cleeve. We had a great day, great evening coming back. But that's, you know, a lot of that's because it's made better when you win. How nice it would be coming all the way back from Plymouth with our tails between our legs if we lost, I don't know. But it's kind of what you make it. But we enjoy playing at our place, you know. And I think there'll be a nice number of people there. And we like putting games on, and other teams like coming to us. You know, it's a hospitable place, so you know, Plymouth will enjoy coming there, their fans will enjoy coming there, you know, and everyone will get looked after. So it'll be a nice day. It'll be a good day.
I can second that. It's a very hospitable place. And, of course, Brockenhurst, as a club, previously made the FA Vars fifth round, I believe. Is that 74, 75? Quite a vintage year, if I do say so myself. But, you know, obviously, you've not been there as long as that. But, I mean, in managerial terms now, you've become quite a fixture at the club at Brockenhurst.
Well, yeah, this is my seventh season now. So, And to be honest, we're kind of bearing the fruit now of a lot of hard work, certainly over the last 3 or 4 years, where we've managed to get, you know, the right people in behind the scenes. First three seasons, there was a lot of hard work going on. With sort of, I suppose it was an uphill task because the structure wasn't right. We've managed to get that right over the last 3 or 4 years. You know, aligning ourselves properly with the youth section, and we're bearing the fruits of that now. You know, we've got a young squad, but they're you know, a lot of those lads that have been come through sort of under 16, 17s, 18s, and you know, we've got 18, 19 year olds now who are approaching 100 senior appearances, and you know, they're really engaged with the football club, and we've got a reputation now of a club that gives younger players a chance. They don't, you know, they don't make up the numbers, and you know, our phone rings at the beginning of the season now. We turn players with, you know, with respect. We've turned players away at the beginning of the season now, as opposed to scratching our heads thinking, who are we going to get in? So, no, we're in good shape, to be fair, but it's taken a while to get there. And you know, our league position as we start this season, and recruitment at the beginning of this season has sort of borne that out, really. So we're happy at the moment.
Yeah, decent position at the moment in the Wessex Premier Division. A very competitive division. You've got clubs like Christchurch who seem to be on the up as well this year. Have you found it difficult? You say that your phone rings now, but yeah, with the changes in the reorganisation of the leagues, you know, there's clubs that maybe were playing at your level that are now at step four. Is that difficult then to attract maybe senior players to create that mix with the younger players, because they can still play level four football and maybe earn a few more pounds?
Well, we don't suffer from that so much because, budget-wise, we still class ourselves as on a shoestring, and I'm quite happy with that. To be fair, we work with what we've got, but there's still an awful lot of money flying around in our league. So those sort of players will often find their way to those clubs, and you know, unless you're a show limit, that it doesn't. You know, it's proven that chucking money at this level for, you can often pick up the odd mercenary here and there. It doesn't necessarily work. You know, we've got lads who could earn a lot more money at other clubs, but you know, they like the environment that we've created, and we've got younger lads who like playing with that type of player as well. But you know, the step four and step three lads who chase the money in this league, there's plenty of them around. Some of them are doing all right. Some of them, you know, they drop down here and they go to clubs, and already they've been in and out of clubs already 10 games in. So, you know, we don't go after that sort of profile, really, to be fair, because I don't think there's any legs in it.
And that's certainly the reason that I admire what you're doing from afar, because it is about building a club. And you mentioned, yeah, building the team behind you. And I know that you're a small club, but everybody seems to know their role, and everybody seems to get on with it and do it very well. And looking at your social media, it's competitive compared to, you know, clubs at step three, step four. And it's all about people buying into that ethic of the club, isn't it?
It is, yeah. We've got a lot of people. We give up a lot of free time, and they're very engaged with the football club. And like I say, when people visit our club, they like to have a good experience and to leave there happy. And, you know, we get a lot of positive feedback. and we like the people who are at the football club to enjoy being there. And to be fair, they do. We don't have many. We've got a lot of players now who've been in and around the club a long time. And we get a lot of players who are asked to go to other clubs who don't. And they get offered money to go to other clubs and they don't. And it's the environment that keeps them there, because it's not the money that's the truth.
Yeah, you mentioned also your commitment to youth and bringing on young players, and then watching them go on and maybe leave the club but go on higher. But there's always still that affiliation that you always I witness on social media, certainly of players that are proud to have played for Brockeners. I mean, when you're bringing on young players, what's the biggest hurdle as a coach to young players at Step 5?
Well, initially, there's once you overcome the physical aspect, which already we've brought some lads through that's a bit of a shock to begin with. But ultimately, there are ways around that to begin with. You know, if they're good footballers, they can move the ball quickly and avoid a lot of that to begin with. But you know, at this level, a good attitude gets you a long way, to be fair. At any level, really, there's some good players in this division, and there's some good players that have failed at this division because of attitude, and they've played high and they've come down and their attitude stunk for a number of clubs. But the younger lads who want to progress and they can get out of this division pretty quickly, to be fair, just by having a good attitude and be willing to learn. And we've had some really good players come through our club, and we've been entrusted by Eastleigh with some players, from Tottenham with some players. And we don't mind being part of that journey, because when clubs and individuals see players that we've moved in and out of our football club, and we stay in contact with them, and they stay in contact with us, and other players see that, and then they think, well, I'll give that club a go, and we have them for a while. And some stay, and some want to progress, and if it suits their lifestyle, they hang around a bit longer. We have players that if their season starts later than ours, they come and have a chunk of their pre-season with us, because they enjoy being around us and what we do as well. So there's always a level of engagement with us as well.
So is that the best bit then? Is it the camaraderie bit? Is it the bit of getting the best out of people? Is that the enjoyable bit of being a manager?
Oh yeah, I find that we make sure the environment's right first, in order for individuals and players to thrive. Because if that's not right, they won't. It doesn't matter how good they are. If the environment's not right, we won't get the best out of them. And whether that's by design or accident, I think we've got it right. I think we've got the dressing room right. I think we've got the environment right. For whatever reason, we tend to enjoy ourselves, but everybody knows that within a certain window, it becomes ultra serious. But outside of it, we all enjoy ourselves, and we all know it's not certain things that aren't life or death, but within a certain window, we're ultra serious. So, we seem to enjoy ourselves along the way. Mm.
So, FA VAR's second round this weekend. What are you, fifth in the table in the Wessex Premier? What are the aims for this season at Brockenhurst?
Well, I said at the start, I think we've got a top eight side in this league. And then that's at the outset, and then we'll see where performances take us. If we finished outside the top eight, I'd be really disappointed. But I think, as a minimum, I think we're a top eight side. And if we can get past the side like Plymouth Parkway, that would be a good benchmark to where we are as a group. I know Saturday is going to be a really tough game. If we want to progress any further where we're at now, we're going to have to play extremely well, because I know what Parkway are about. They're very organised, technically very good, they're ex- experience. You know, they've got, you know, they've got all the tools necessary to be successful in this competition and at this level and the level beyond. So we've got our work cut out. So, but you know, our season as a whole, we've played this week not at the ideal preparation because of cancellations, etc. We've already played two games this week, Monday and Wednesday. So we've played two cup games this week. We've progressed in. I think we're already, so we're still in five cup competitions as well as the Vars. So there's plenty of opportunities to do well as the Vars. But obviously, we certainly want to progress after Saturday. So we'll be doing what we can to make that happen.
Well, it's certainly a result I'll be looking out for, Pat. Best of luck on Saturday and best of luck for the rest of the season. And thank you for joining us on the Non-League Football Show.
Thanks very much, Tim. Lovely to speak to you. Cheers.
So let's round off the show and head on over to Non-League Paper Towers as ever. And welcome back to the Non-League Show. Senior writer of the Non-League Paper, Mr. David Richardson. Welcome back, David.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for having me on.
It's always a pleasure. It's always a pleasure. Now, as we go, it's been fairly quiet across the world of Non-League. Not in my world, but across the world of Non-League. But I suppose we should definitely, you know, start a chat about FA Trophy. I mean, last weekend we had the first round qualifying ties. You know, we had Monday's draw and many a replay this week.
Yeah. More FA Trophy action. You know, the cup competitions sort of come quickly this sort of time of year. Again, it's sort of the Vars this week, isn't it? And we had the FA Cup as well not too long ago. We had the excitement of the draw last week and all of that. But no FA Trophy last weekend, which a slightly dented schedule, I suppose, by the weather. But nonetheless, plenty of ties played in that round. And yeah, the competition moves on. It's not quite at the stage yet where teams are thinking about Wembley and what might be ahead, but it's slowly and surely getting there.
It's not so far away. I mean, interesting you say about the dent in the schedule. The next round, I think we mentioned this last week, is due to take place the weekend of the 9th of November, which is also the same weekend of the first round of the FA Cup, when many a non-league club, mentioning no names, are already in action. So it will mean some of those trophy games will be moved to midweek again. And you know, there's been that debate in the past about should the trophy be a midweek competition? And it does sort of, it loses a bit of its gloss, doesn't it? If those first games are taking place on a Tuesday and a Wednesday night rather than a Saturday.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think for such a sort of prestigious competition, really, in non-league, the FA Trophy should be a Saturday competition. As we know, I think if you're playing at Wembley in the final, and you know, over the years we've seen so many great matches in that final and across the competition. You know, I totally agree with you on that. Of course, there'll always be that argument, I suppose, when games are being rearranged. It might be said that fixtures are called off because of the weather, which, you know, I think there are rumours that we might be in for a difficult winter weather-wise. So hopefully that doesn't come true. But no, I mean, there's always going to be these sort of discussions and you do get fixture pile-ups. And I do, you know, sympathise with clubs about these sort of things. As we know, it can be difficult if you're, for cash flow reasons, if you're not having Saturday home games where crowds are bigger. But I think for a competition like the FA Trophy and the FA Vars, they should be played on a Saturday and be given the respect that they deserve.
Yeah, I think that certainly my fear is that if you move it to a midweek competition, whether you know that's by chance of weather, whether you know with the fact that we're running out of weekends or things like that, it makes it a more minor competition in the eyes of certain clubs. And then, you know, we all talk about you know the chance to play at Wembley, and we know how fantastic non-league finals day is, but if we're moving it to a Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Monday night competition, then has that appeal of Wembley at the end, is it still the same carrot that we always thought it was?
Yeah, I mean, there's always this sort of discussion as well, Jimmy, that you've raised there about teams, you know, fielding weakened sides because they may not, you know, want to play their full strength team out in early rounds. It's always funny when suddenly you get to sort of that quarter final stage and a very realistic chance of getting to Wembley, and suddenly it's treated with a lot of respect. I mean, much like the FA Cup, really, in the later rounds. But again, if you were to move it into midweek, it would sort of only detriment the competition further. You know, you'd have teams playing their strongest team on a Saturday and then resting even more players on a Tuesday night for the competition. It would only hinder what the competition is.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the fact that we are running out of weekend shows how far advanced this season has already become. You know, we're already moving into a new month, and it also shows how close non-league finals day is becoming. So, yeah, people should make sure that they have Sunday the 17th of May 2020 in their diaries, because that's the big day that people will be looking forward to. Not just the clubs that make it through to the FA Vars final and FA Trophy final, but also for all the neutrals that enjoy that great day out.
Yeah, definitely. It's I said before, it's always a fantastic day. Finals day at Wembley, usually the sun's shining, and yeah, like you say, it's not just for the clubs that are involved in those two games. It's for any non-league fans, any football fans who want to see two games in a day at Wembley, and hopefully there'll be another good turnout that we've seen over the years with plenty of people going through the turnstiles at Wembley. So we'll look forward to that. But obviously, in the meantime, plenty of games to be played up until that point, and plenty of things to be settled.
Yeah, last week we had the FA Trophy. Then this week we have the FA Vars. It is the second round proper already. There's 26 new clubs joining the competition at this stage, making a total of 64 ties. And, well, you know, we say there's many ties to be played, but surely soon Dave Anton will have to be addressed as the former FA Vars winning manager. we say about the seriousness of the competition. It's nice that there's enhanced prize money in the trophy in the Vars this year again. Winning clubs in the Vars this round, it's going to be £900 for the winners, £300 for those clubs exiting the competition. And I think the best thing this season is the pyramid reorganisation has given some new clubs a chance to shine in the competition in the FA Vars.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, the prize money, like you say, Tim, is obviously really important for these clubs and getting through the rounds. You know, it's great the sort of losing team gets some prize money as well to sort of appreciate their efforts in the tournament. And it's a way that, you know, the FA can get some of that money down from the TV broadcasting rights, etc., into non-league. You know, as you spoke about in your non-league paper column last weekend, prize money can be so lucrative to clubs, obviously, in these sort of competitions and the FA Cup as well. And then it's sort of up to them about how to distribute that into their club and what they spend it on. But then, and, you know, what the best sort of route for that money is. But as you say, you know, second round proper coming up this weekend. We've got plenty of coverage in the paper on Sunday, and we look forward to seeing those ties. Like I say, it's not quite at a stage yet where these teams will be thinking about Wembley, but soon it will become a very attractive proposition. And you know, there's no reason why these clubs, even at this round, shouldn't be trying to dream big and get through to the next one. Because you know, it's certainly a really great day if you get to that final and you play at Wembley. And you know, we do laugh about Dave Anderson and Chertsey last year getting to the final and obviously winning, but you know, it just goes to show that for someone like Dave, he's so experienced in football and in non-league with, you know, the things he's done and won, that, you know, you can still have an experience like that that you might not have had before, and you can, you know, it's something you'll never forget. So we'll look forward to this weekend and see what happens going forward in the competition.
Yeah, it is one of those things that various people, we're lucky enough to speak to managers, chairmen, people involved in football every week, every day. But a large number of anecdotes do come from their experiences in the FA Trophy, their experiences in the FA VAR. So these where memories are made. A couple of new big managerial appointments since we last spoke to Matt Badcock last week, and I'm not entirely sure that these two have got FA Trophy or FA VAR stories, but who knows? Maybe I'll find out in the coming week or so. Paul Cox back in management, probably best remembered from his time at the helm with Mansfield Town, and now the former Kettering Town player has become the new manager there. Can he successfully lead the Poppies into a new era?
Like you say, he's obviously got a great sort of pedigree in non-league, having won promotion into the Football League with Mansfield. But obviously, he's going into Kettering at step two, having won promotion from step three last year. And they're currently bottom of National League North. So it's a difficult job to be going into. He'll quickly have to get to grips with the squad and what he's working with there. Obviously, he knows the club well, having, like you say, played there before. But for someone of his experience, I think maybe that's probably what Kettering might need at this moment in time to try and stabilise and try and establish themselves in National League North. Obviously, first port of call will be making sure they survive this season, and then looking to go forward and try and climb up the division and get into that sort of promotion contention. But for now, it's going to be a tough task for him. It goes without saying, really. If you go into any club at the bottom of the division, it's going to be difficult. But I think someone with his experience, he hopefully can be capable of turning things around.
Yeah, and my fear is always it's a big appointment, a very big appointment, and it shows where Kettering want to be heading. But obviously, those Kettering Town supporters have had some very bad years and some lean years, but they're on their way back up. But it's now managing their expectations as well, as you say. They're bottom of the table at the moment. Even if he was best mates with Harry Potter, there's a big task ahead of him there to get them challenging, even in the next season and season beyond. Mm. There's a big project there. There's the issue of a ground as well, and I know all that's rumbling in the background, and it's going to take a big personality. And I know Paul Cox has got that experience and that knowledge of what he's got to do, but it's going to be managing the expectation of the fans, who rightly think that they deserve to be in the top tier of non-league football.
That was one thing. I didn't mention there about the club and their sort of ambitions of wanting to sort of be at this level, and clearly, like you say, it's a statement of intent getting someone like Paul Cox in. It's difficult to sort of manage expectations. I think when you win promotion, for fans to then go into a new division, and then suddenly you go from winning every week to not winning every week and not being at the top to being at the bottom. And it's difficult. And obviously a club like Kettering, who has had a lot of past success in non-league, as we know, they'll feel like they don't want to sort of blow their chance, having worked so hard to sort of get back up to this level. We'll see. Obviously, the first port of call is just making sure that they're safe this season, which, with only two clubs going down from step two this season, it shouldn't be too much of a difficult job, he says. But look, we'll see. There's still plenty of time left in the season.
Yeah, and talking of a statement of intention, I mean, up at AFC Fylde, we wondered who they could find to replace the very successful Jay Challoner. And they've certainly grabbed some headlines. Jim Bentley resigning at League Two Morecambe to take over the reins at Fylde. That's a massive appointment too, isn't it?
Yeah, another one who's been sort of attracted into non-league. Obviously, we saw Notts County come down. Chesterfield come down as sort of big clubs and also big managers now in the National League. And Jim Bentley, it was of course at Morecambe. I think it was about an 18-year association with them, both sort of as a player and a coach and a manager. And I think he's done a really good job over there over sort of the last few years. He of course was the longest-serving manager in the Football League, and um, you know, they're bottom of League Two. I just feel maybe he thought that the time was right to move on and sort of seek a fresh challenge, really. And when you sort of go into finals, you're going to know that already there's a decent squad there on paper that hasn't sort of clicked so far this season, but also very good resources. You know, a nice new stadium with a lot of sort of good infrastructure there, trying to move it towards the Football League, which they're trying to do. So, I mean, you can see why that he's made the move, but at the same time, I imagine it was a difficult decision to leave Morecambe. Our man John Couch was at Maidenhead for their draw on Tuesday night with Fylde, and heard from Jim Bentley then. So there's a bit in Sunday's paper about that. So we can read his thoughts then. But another interesting appointment.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned that long association with the club, and he was the longest serving manager in levels 1-4. It shows what a massive draw that AFC Fylde project is. But again, they're going to want success, and a Football League status is going to be their aim very quickly, I'd imagine. And you mentioned that they've got a squad there because they challenged so successfully last year, and you just hope that he's able to reignite that passion and that success from last season to get them ticking again and maybe push for that promotion this season.
Yeah, I believe he still thinks that they've got a shot of making the playoffs. It is a very tight league, the National League. You know, there's not many points really separating the teams from that seventh place down to sort of the bottom half. So, you know, there's not all hopes lost. A new manager bounce coming in, you never know, might get a run going. But like I said, I think there is a really talented squad there at Fylde. Obviously, for whatever reason, it just sort of hasn't worked in this first part of the season. But if they can get on a roll and get winning games, then, you know, we've seen it in the past before about how clubs can suddenly sort of come from nowhere and end up in the playoffs. And that's certainly what Jim Bentley and the club will be hoping as they try and reach the Football League.
Yeah, you mentioned how tight the National League is. I mean, we're nearly halfway through already in the National League. I think 19 games played already at 21, I think, is the halfway point, isn't it, in the National League this year. It's very tight, top and bottom. We saw Bromley's lead shorten this week, and the playoff zone is very competitive. And as you say, the playoff zone being so much larger nowadays than back in the day, it gives an opportunity for clubs to get in there because it's tight across the league. And you look at those clubs even in the drop zone, they're neck and neck, I think, on level points, three out of the four there. And a bit of form can quickly lift them clear. So, yeah, we always say, you know, don't pay attention to the league table until after Christmas. But I think, yeah, there's certainly clubs that are, you know, maybe higher than many of us would have expected earlier on the season. Clubs that are much lower than we would have expected when the season started out. So there's still lots of twists and turns to come in that National League this season.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's only 5 points separating 7th place down to 17th, which sort of gives you an idea of just how close it is. Rather a little bit under that point range. But again, any sort of run at the moment, and you'll be right in there. You know, there's still plenty of games to go. Like you say, you probably don't look at the table, you know, seriously until, I suppose, January time. But, you know, having played so many games already, it's difficult not to, and difficult not to sort of have a picture of what might happen. Bromley still up at the top, had their lead cut a little bit in recent weeks, but still up there. Halifax, another sort of real sort of surprise package, really, of that top three. Also with Yeovil, who are in there and seem to have adjusted really well. Notts County, I've got going now. I saw them on Tuesday night at Woking, and they looked sort of a very professional outfit. You could see the difference really between the two sides, what with Woking being part-time and Notts County were very clinical in the final third, and Neil Larby seems to have got them up and running now. But then again, you know, Torquay are in there too, having won promotion from National League South last season under Gary Johnson, who knows the division so well, knows how to win promotion from it. Barrow playing great football under Ian Everett, and doing really well after, you know, a slow start, which maybe caused a little bit of concern, but yeah, he stuck to his ways and then started getting results. And also Harrogate out there as well, who similar to sort of filed in the sense of reaching the playoffs last season, started slowly again, but they've really got going now and they're up in the mix. So an interesting sort of second half and a bit of the campaign left.
So, David, already a million and one reasons to buy the non-league paper on Sunday, but anything else we can expect to read?
Well, we've got all the usual action as we always do from the National League and beyond, right down to steps 5 and 6, plus all the league tables and results and midweek results and all those sort of staffy things that people like. I spoke to Harry Wheeler this week about his ambitions to get back into management or coaching, having been sacked at Billericay for the second time, and his interesting spell there. So that was interesting to hear him speak. He's a very confident guy, nice guy, and sort of wishing well that he could get back in somewhere. And yeah, I can't, off the top of my head now, I can't think what my colleagues are like.
There's still breaking news to happen. It's still stuff to report on. Well, as ever, David, it's been a pleasure to have you on the Non-League Football Show. Don't forget to read and buy the Non-League paper on Sunday and tell all your friends about it as well.
Brilliant. Thanks very much, Tim.
So that's it for this week. A big thank you to everybody for joining me, including all of my guests, and a big thank you to everybody for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show, and Dave Anderson on at DaveAnderson78. Caroline Barker is at Caroline Barker, and myself at Tim Fuel. And don't forget, you can also follow the Non-League Paper at Non-League Paper. Plus, of course, you can find us every week on Audio Boom, on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, via your smart speakers, and all good podcast aggregation sites. Thank you and goodbye.
Jabber production. JIBBA JABBA.